VOA News.
The United Nations Security Council met once more to discuss Russia's invasion of Ukraine.
We are dealing with the full-fledged invasion on several fronts of one member state of the United Nations, Ukraine, by another, the Russian Federation, a permanent member of the Security Council, in violation of the United Nations Charter, and with several aims, including redrawing the international recognized borders between the two countries.
Plus, what are the ramifications of significant losses among Russian troops in Ukraine?
They may have lost as many troops in 4 weeks as they did in 10 years in Afghanistan.
And later in the program, examining possible resolutions for the war. Today is Tuesday, April 5th. From the Voice of America, this is Flashpoint Ukraine. Good evening. I'm VOA Chief National Correspondent Steve Herman.
And I'm Steve Miller. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky addressed the United Nations Security Council on Tuesday as it met once more to discuss the ongoing Russian invasion. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres set the stage.
We are dealing with the full-fledged invasion on several fronts of one member state of the United Nations, Ukraine, by another, the Russian Federation, a permanent member of the Security Council, in violation of the United Nations Charter, and with several aims, including redrawing the international recognized borders between the two countries.
VOA UN correspondent Margaret Bashir shared with me what the Ukrainian president had to say to the council.
I think his main message to the UN Security Council, first of all, was to scold them a little bit. He said they have been inactive. They've not done anything to stop the war in his country. And why? It's because of the veto that Russia holds. And so Russia has basically been able to veto action, for instance, on humanitarian resolution, on a resolution condemning the war itself and such. So he said to them, you know, we're dealing with a state that's turning the UN Security Council veto into the right to die. And he was quite upset about that. And so he said, you need to get rid of it. You need to reform the UN if you want international law to be restored. So actually, UN reform is like a big topic, and Security Council reform in particular, and that's been going on for decades. He also, his other big message to the council was there needs to be accountability for Russian crimes committed in Ukraine.
Speaking of Russia, on the Security Council, using its veto and the alleged crimes committed by Russian forces in Ukraine, what did the Russian ambassador have to say during his time presenting to the council?
Sure. Well, he kind of keeps repeating the same message each time. The Russian primary defense in all of this is that it's a big anti-Russian propaganda campaign from the West and Ukraine against Moscow, that they're sort of the victims of all of this, that they're not perpetrating a war. They're there to rescue the people of Donbass from Ukraine because they don't let them speak Russian and things like this. So today, Russian Ambassador Vasily Nebenzia told the council that, you know, we've heard again a huge amount of lies about Russian soldiers and the military. And he said there are many people willing to testify that the Russian soldiers were good and didn't harm them.
Margaret, U.S. President Joe Biden said that the alleged actions by Russian troops in Bucha and elsewhere do amount to war crimes. What did the U.S. ambassador to the UN have to say during today's meeting?
Well, Ambassador Linda Thomas-Greenfield just came back last night from a quick trip to Moldova and Romania over the weekend. She went there to meet government officials, but also to meet with refugees. So she shared a few of their stories. And one of the things she said was, you know, these people stuffed their lives into backpacks and they left the only home they'd ever known. And she said the United States is studying the pictures that are emerging from the suburb of Kiev called Bucha, where we've seen corpses on the streets. There's satellite imagery. In fact, President Zelensky presented a very short, like, minute and a half video today during the council meeting of scenes from Bucha, from Irpin, and from other towns and cities in Ukraine. Because the Russians are also saying, we didn't kill anyone in Bucha. The bodies on the street are fresh. We didn't kill them. But you can see in this video that these bodies are decomposing and quite gruesome looking, frankly. Ambassador Thomas Greenfield said the U.S. is working to independently confirm what happened in these pictures and these images, particularly from Bucha. And the U.S. has assessed that members of Russia's forces have committed war crimes in Ukraine.
VOA UN correspondent Margaret Bashir. Thank you.
Welcome, Steve.
In the wake of Russia's withdrawal from towns surrounding the Ukrainian capital, Kyiv, residents say they are heartbroken by the death and destruction left behind. VOA's Heather Murdoch has their stories.
This plot of land in the Ukrainian capital, Kyiv, has been set aside to bury and honor civilians and soldiers killed in recent battles and future war victims. Over the weekend, as Ukraine announced it had retaken towns surrounding the capital, gruesome reports emerged about the deaths of hundreds of civilians, with many bodies left on the streets. On Sunday, a giant fire raged in the southern port city of Odessa after Russian airstrikes hit an oil processing plant and fuel depots around the city. In the cemetery in Kyiv, the facility's director says the war may now be focused further east and south, but he thinks the relative peace in the capital is temporary. Since the war began in late February, 30 missiles have hit this cemetery.
It is impossible to feel safe here. For example, on March 2nd, during the escalation in Bucha, missiles hit our cemetery within 100 meters of the workers. The workers hid inside of the graves, and after the hit, kept digging.
Locals say they are shocked and heartbroken by the recent death and destruction. Kyiv remains a tangle of barricades, and the remnants of bombed buildings still lay exactly where they fell after being hit. Russia says it has withdrawn from Kyiv, but some believe they will continue to attack in other regions.
I don't trust them. I think they are regrouping, and it could be even worse if Russia moves more troops to the east. It's not easy for Ukrainian soldiers to protect those regions.
In the western part of the country, where air raid sirens are heard daily, even though attacks here are infrequent, leaders say their government is preparing civilians to withstand battle.
We provide different kind of training, first aid, chemical tactics, air raid distractions, defense skills, including defend the buildings we are in now, the city municipality.
This school in Vinnytsia is being used to house families who are among the millions of displaced people in Ukraine. Many say they are furious.
If we have to, we will fight them with our bare hands and tear them apart for killing our children and everything else they have done.
The war in Ukraine has forced about 10 million people to flee their homes, and the United Nations says roughly half are children. The Ukrainian government says mass killings in Bucha and other towns near Kyiv appear to be war crimes. Heather Murdoch, VOA News, Vinnytsia and Kyiv, Ukraine.
Ukraine and Russian-backed separatist forces both reported Tuesday that an industrial acid tank has been blown up in eastern Ukraine, creating a serious potential hazard for local people, and each side pinned the blame on the other. It was not immediately possible to independently verify the incident or to establish who was responsible.
Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky also spoke with journalists earlier on Tuesday, telling them that Ukraine was ready to join NATO, and as he put it, do so tomorrow. Zelensky said that Ukraine is not hiding anything, that he's spoken about this to the NATO Secretary General, as well as to the leaders of nations about concrete conditions for Ukraine to join NATO. He said Ukraine has lost too many lives to be afraid to say what they think. Zelensky also reiterated his stance that Kyiv will not engage Moscow's delegation on the Russian demands of, quote, denazification and demilitarization, end quote. In Europe, NATO said Russia appears to be regrouping to focus on the Donbas region and that the organization is discussing ways to deliver high-end weapons to Kyiv. Henry Ridgewell in London has been following that story.
NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg held a press conference Tuesday ahead of this crucial meeting of foreign ministers, which is the first for the alliance in the wake of the revelations that have come out of Ukraine in the past few days concerning those allegations of war crimes by Russia. Really, this is being seen as a test of the response that NATO can provide. NATO Secretary General said that in light of that, the alliance would look to step up its military help to Ukraine, perhaps delivering more in the way of anti-tank and air defense systems. He said that there is a noticeable change in the posture of the Russian forces in that they, following their withdrawal from around Kiev, they are looking to regroup and in the coming weeks will likely look to attack further in the east and in the south of Ukraine, and particularly as they try and form a land bridge to Crimea, which they forcefully annexed in 2014. So that now is a crucial phase of the war and that Ukraine must be supported more. But it has to be said, in this press conference, the details were inevitably missing because the key elements will be decided by NATO foreign ministers and by leaders of those nations as well. So we'll wait for further details in the coming days.
Speaking of details, I want to ask you about some unconfirmed reports earlier on Tuesday that the Czech Republic was supplying Ukraine with tanks. What can you tell us about what is known about that information?
The Czech defense minister, Jana Černáková, appeared to confirm that her country is going to provide tanks and light infantry vehicles to Ukraine. These would be Soviet-era T-72 battle tanks, unmodernized. They've been part of the Czech armed forces for several decades, but were being used by reservist forces in the Czech Republic. This would be the first delivery to Ukraine of tanks and what may be seen as offensive or attack weapons, if you like, rather than the defensive weapons that have been seen so far.
And one more thing, Henry. I know that European Union Council members were also meeting on Tuesday. What can you tell us about those discussions?
This is very much focused around really the economic pressure that the European Union can look to exert on Russia. There have been several rounds of sanctions so far since Russia began its invasion in February, mainly targeting Russian individuals close to the Kremlin, close to President Vladimir Putin, but also targeting some of the largest Russian banks. But some of those banks were actually left out because they are crucial, for example, to the energy trade between Russia and Europe. Everyone will be aware that Europe is importing still large amounts of gas, oil and coal from Russia simply because their economies are reliant upon it. So the ministers were looking at ways to cut down more quickly on those energy imports.
VOA's Henry Ridgwell reporting for us from London. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Steve.
On Tuesday, U.S. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin said that the United States will send a variant of the Switchblade drone that has an anti-armor warhead to Ukraine as quickly as possible. The Ukrainian arm of the Red Cross on Monday urged countries on both sides of the conflict to allow humanitarian assistance to vulnerable people still living in cities on the front lines. The ICRC Ukraine spokesperson, Alona Sinenko, speaking to Sky News, describes the situation in Mariupol as dire, with people surviving on just about no aid at all.
People have been staying there for a week with absolutely no humanitarian supplies getting in, and our staff members have now been trying for 4 days to organize the safe passage for those people who want to leave the city, to be able to do that safely, and for those who want to bring some essential supplies for those who want to stay.
Sinenko stressed the need to allow humanitarian assistance to those vulnerable populations.
The amount of destruction, the amount of human suffering that we are seeing in places that we can reach is really shocking. And it is urgent that people can receive life-saving humanitarian assistance.
She also implored all parties in the Ukraine conflict to abide by international law and protect civilians.
Listening to VOA's Flashpoint Ukraine. I'm Steve Herman. Joining us now on Flashpoint Ukraine is Mark Kansian, a senior advisor with the International Security Program at the Center for Strategic and International Studies here in Washington. The former U.S. Marine Corps colonel has been closely examining the ramifications of significant losses among Russian troops in Ukraine. Mark, how big have these losses been for the Russians, and will they be able to adequately replace the casualties with reserve forces?
The casualties have been quite substantial. The estimates as of last week were between 7,000 and 15,000 dead. Typically, there are two wounded for every dead soldier, two wounded who can't go back to service. So that would mean that the Russians have probably lost about 40,000 troops, and their initial combat force was in the vicinity of about 150,000. The total force was maybe 190, 200,000, but that included a lot of the militias and the Donbas and support troops. So they've probably lost maybe 25% of their initial combat force, which is a very large loss. The other thing to keep in mind is that in 10 years of war in Afghanistan, the Russians lost about 15,000 killed. So they may have lost as many troops in 4 weeks as they did in 10 years in Afghanistan. This is a relatively small Russian army. This is not the Red Army of the Cold War, which numbered 3.5 million. It's not the Red Army of World War II that marched to victory over the bodies of its dead.
What about the reserves? What sort of shape are they in to be able to bring more troops into Ukraine if they need to?
The Russians don't have a very good reserve system. Unlike the United States, they don't have organized reserve units the way we have, for example, with the National Guard. They've tried to create these kinds of units, but with indifferent success. They do have lists of former soldiers that they can call up, and I think they've been doing some of that, but they have not been receiving refresher training. I think most of the reinforcements that you're seeing come from other units in the Russian army from other parts of the country, pulling them into this conflict in Ukraine.
You mentioned the Red Army during World War II when the Soviet Union saw the loss of, what was it, about 10 million soldiers in the fight against the Nazis, and the Soviets persevered. Do you expect the Russian people are willing to accept a significant percentage of sacrifices of conscripts in this war?
The short answer is no. First, it's important to keep in mind that the Russian army is about two-thirds volunteers, which they called contract soldiers, and about one-third conscripts. The Russians have continued a conscript system, believing it's important for national service. Some conscripts have been sent into Ukraine. It's very sensitive because most of them believe that they would not be used outside of the Russian territory. And this is a military that's very sensitive to casualties, not just the military, but a society. And during the Afghan war, for example, there were mothers groups who were very active in opposing the war and asking questions about what was happening to their sons. You're seeing that now. So I think the population is going to be strongly opposed to these high casualties when they become apparent.
The world is reacting with horror to the massacres in Bucha and other cities in Ukraine, which witnesses say were carried out by Russian troops before they retreated. What happened, Mark? The Russian army had been considered by many military analysts to be a relatively disciplined fighting force.
Yeah, the performance of the Russians has been a surprise. The expectation had been that this military had been reformed. It had done very badly in the 2008 war against Georgia. They had got smaller, but they had become higher quality, more volunteers, better training. The force did pretty well in Crimea in 2014 and fought effectively in Syria, though brutally. So the expectation was that this would be disciplined and tactically skilled force. That's not what we've seen. We've seen extensive use of firepower against civilians, and then there are these allegations of massacres. We really can't be sure what happened, but it shows why it's so important to get independent assessments on the ground, to get teams in there to find out the facts so that the world can know what happened and possibly bring those responsible to justice.
Mark Kansian from CSIS, thank you for joining us today on Flashpoint Ukraine.
Thanks for having me on the show.
VOA examines the current situation on the ground between Russia and Ukraine and looks at four possible outcomes of the conflict.
A look at four ways the war in Ukraine could end. Russian win. Ahead of Russia's invasion, many Western intelligence assessments predicted a quick Russian victory. That did not happen. Ukraine mounted a strong initial response with highly motivated fighters and weapons from countries around the world. For Russia to win now, it must follow a more difficult path. Russian troops have attempted to capture major Ukrainian cities, but struggled after finding them already heavily fortified. As a result, Moscow shifted its strategy to focus on Ukraine's eastern Donbas region, where pro-Russian rebels have been waging a separatist rebellion. if the Russians try to make a big push to surround the Donbas, that could be very difficult for Ukrainian forces to keep fighting in the way that they have been fighting. And it could make things difficult for resupply efforts by the U.S., NATO, and other allies as well.
If Russia were to try to capture major Ukrainian cities again, including the capital, Kyiv, it would mean using ever more powerful strategies, including airstrikes. This would result in more civilian casualties. Russia has significantly more troops than Ukraine, as well as more weapons, giving it a large military advantage. Ukraine prevails. For Ukraine to prevail on the battlefield, it would need to earn victories against a much stronger Russian force. Military analysts say that to hold the capital, Ukraine might have to give up smaller cities. Ukrainian forces could continue to mount armed ambushes and attack Russian support lines, hoping to force a stalemate that leads to a Russian withdrawal.
And what Russia is doing so far is not really a pullback that shows that Russian forces are going to go home back to Russia. In fact, what the U.S. suspects is that the Russians are clearly just repositioning and regrouping, refueling, resupplying, and getting ready to go and attack Ukraine some more.
More likely, Ukraine could prevail through the combination of military successes and worldwide pressure on Russia. Russia is suffering from both economic sanctions and diplomatic isolation. The war could end with a diplomatic solution, especially if Russian ally China exerts strong pressure on Moscow. Another way Ukraine could prevail, a remote possibility, is if Russian President Vladimir Putin were removed from office. This would likely require ordinary Russians to revolt against the war or elites to carry out a coup. Protracted quagmire. Even if Russia could capture Ukraine's major cities, an easy victory would not be assured. Ukrainian fighters could engage in a drawn-out insurgency that would last months or even years. Insurgents could dig deep into cities and hide on rooftops, in alleyways, and inside buildings. A well-coordinated force, armed with weapons from the West, could hold off a large assault for a long time. This could result in a stalemate. Such a conflict could lead to mounting casualties on both sides and wear away Russian resolve. This outcome would mirror Russia's fight in Afghanistan in the 1980s. It is not clear what Putin's goal is for Ukraine. If he wants to install a pro-Russian government, he would likely need a Russian occupation to support it. Such an occupation could also face prolonged armed resistance and lead to a protracted quagmire. Wider war. The worst case scenario would be an expanded war that brings in other European countries. Such a war could involve several nuclear armed countries. It could escalate quickly and lead to catastrophic outcomes. For these reasons, European countries, the United States, and NATO have been careful to try to keep the conflict from escalating. They made clear they were not in a war with Russia and ruled out sending troops. They also rejected the idea of a no-fly zone over Ukraine because it could lead to the downing of Russian planes. A wider war could still be unintentionally triggered by a series of missteps. It is also possible that Russia could intentionally escalate the conflict if, for example, it was facing defeat.
And that's going to do it for us today. Be sure to stay up to date with continuing coverage in Ukraine, as well as news and events from around the world 24 hours a day. You can do so at voanews.com, as well as on our social media platforms. Just be sure to follow at VOA News. On behalf of the entire Flashpoint Ukraine team and VOA Chief National Correspondent Steve Herman, thank you for listening. Until next time, I'm VOA's Steve Miller. Be well, be safe, and good night.
This is the voice of America. Washington. Washington, Bob Pompos in D.C.